Fire. Fire is one of the essential elements in our universe. It's a symbol of passion, of strength, and of transformation. Pagan and earth-centered traditions recognize fire as one of the four physical and spiritual elements, the other three being earth and air and water. And of these elements, fire is the only one that can completely transform things that it comes into contact with. When something burns, it changes into smoke and ash and no longer resembles its original form. I got to visit some friends in Washington State a couple of years ago, and my visit coincided with the first wildfire of the season. The fire started the day I arrived, and as night fell, we could clearly see the front lines of that fire moving across the mountain just a few miles away. We could see where it had leapt from the mountain down into the neighborhood at its base, right across the river from us. As someone who studied fire behavior and worked on prescribed or controlled burns here in the Midwest, I was both fascinated and horrified at the scale and the movement of this fire. The air was filled with smoke and ash when we woke up the next morning, and we spent the day indoors, watching the news and hearing what was happening just across the river. And the day after that, the fire was partially contained. We were able to get out and look at what was going on. Entire slopes of the mountain were covered in black ash, and one of the industrial buildings in town that had caught fire looked like its metal beams had melted. And we knew that several homes had been destroyed, and we also knew that nobody had been hurt or killed in this fire. Later that week, I drove through a pass through the Cascade mountain range that had experienced massive wildfires the year before. In large swaths of land, instead of these beautiful, lush green crowns, the trees were bare skeletons. And I could imagine then, after having just seen this big western wildfire the week before, how black and bare those areas must have been the previous year. Sometimes I feel that black and bare, covered in ash where there had been lush growth. It's easy to feel burned over when there's so much fighting and anger around me. But here's the thing. Fire doesn't destroy completely or permanently. For underneath the blackened pine and fir trees in the Cascades, I also saw carpets of light green, new growth, coming up out of the ashes, rebirth. In fact, fire that isn't huge, catastrophic wildfire is actually a way to keep some ecosystems healthy, like prairies and savannas and even some kinds of forests. Fire clears clutter on the forest floor, making space for plants and seedlings to grow. The plants that burn to give their nutrients to the soil that those new plants and those seedlings need. There are actually some species of trees that are fire-adapted, that need fire, like the jack pines and the pine barrens of New York and New Jersey, and the lodgepole pines in the Pacific Northwest. Both of these species have cones that only open to release their seeds after the fire has melted the resin that seals the cones shut. The giant sequoia, also out in the Pacific Northwest, whose seedlings can only grow after fire has created some gaps in the dense and dark canopy above them. Fire can kill pests and diseases. It can help control some of the plants that spread too quickly and take over. It can create habitat for bugs and animals that nest in little holes in the trees and logs. The trick is that for this to be true, the fires need to be smaller and less intense. And if there are smaller and less intense fires in the forest, then the chances for a large catastrophic wildfire go down because there's less fuel lying around that could burn out of control. This is why land managers use prescribed fire to help some of these ecosystems be as healthy as possible. This is true for us humans, too. Sometimes to make room for the germination and growth of new ideas and new ways of being, we need to clean out some of our gunk to clear some space in our hearts. This can happen when we make time for personal spiritual practices like prayer or meditation or yoga or anything that helps us learn how to be present to what's going on within and around us. The practice of being present can help us remember who we are and what we're here for. It can happen as we practice community building, as it happens here when we make sure to welcome anyone who walks into this space. And it can happen in our movement building, as our perspective continually widens to include the lives and concerns of people who have been ignored or oppressed. This clearing of space in our hearts is part of the process of transformation, the thing that happens to us as our beliefs evolve so that new actions and behaviors that are more kind and compassionate and generous and inclusive can come into being. Transformation is more than just the changed behavior or environment that results. And this is true for our larger systems. Until we find ourselves clearing out ways of thinking and being that don't serve all parts of the system, in other words, all our neighbors and our surroundings, we won't have the space for true liberation and equity for all. I find the metaphor of a controlled burn to be really useful here as I think about goals and methods for our activism. The idea of creating sanctuary space in churches for people in danger of deportation could only have emerged after people stopped thinking of churches as merely houses of worship. The idea of mass protest could only have come about after people stopped accepting that our legislators would represent all interests in a way that felt fair to everyone. The idea of Black Lives Matter could only be accepted after people stopped thinking that the civil rights era was the solution to systemic racism. And sometimes a prescribed burn isn't intense enough to make all the space that's needed for the maintenance of a healthy ecosystem, the opposite of what I just said before. One of the more radical understandings of how social change is made is that when a system centers power in representatives of the dominant culture so fully that it cannot be reformed, it needs to be completely destroyed and rebuilt from the ground up. Reform is sometimes not enough. The idea of police abolition is an example of this. Just as it could never have been enough to simply reform the institution of slavery, proponents of police abolition believe that the system is so corrupt that how we do law enforcement has to be completely re-envisioned, removed and replaced with something different. Many religious traditions have a theology or a history or both of burning it down. God tossed Adam and Eve out of the Garden of Eden so they would discover what it was like to have to fend for themselves. Moses tried to completely shift the social structure of his people by removing them from the society that had enslaved them. The Buddha, Muhammad, Jesus, prophets all who tried to bring the tools of deep transformation within us to their times. I find a great personification of the idea of personal and cultural transformation in the Hindu tradition's trio of gods. Brahma created the universe, and Brahma is the least worshipped of the three gods. Some say because his role is over, the creation is done. Vishnu is the preserver of the universe. His role is to continually restore the balance of good and evil. It is said that he has incarnated 9 times to fulfill that role during troubled times here on earth, including as Krishna, the deliverer of the Bhagavad Gita, and as Buddha. And then there's Shiva. Shiva, whose role is to destroy the universe so that it can be recreated. Shiva's worshippers believe that it is this attitude, this attribute of creation, that is the most crucial, the destruction that makes space for the new. Of course, in both prescribed fire and clearing space in our hearts, the destruction isn't just for destruction's sake. We are getting things out of the way so that we can see where our creativity is hiding. Shiva isn't known as just the destroyer, but as the destroyer of evil and transformer. And Hindus believe that Shiva's destructive power is used to destroy the illusions and imperfections of the world so that it can be recreated.
Our second wisdom reading is from the poet Samantha Reynolds, founder and president of Echo Storytelling. Hollow out your memories until you get to the dustiest bits, jammed into the corners of your spirit. Forgotten weekends, beliefs you thought were glued on tight, the way shame ignites, only dormant, never gone. How does it all fit? The wake of a life, so much history, spooled inside us. You wonder what the point is in all this remembering, but a tree does more than reach for the sun. It feasts on the rain, sucking it like a straw from its darkest buried roots. This is where creativity hides. Wearing the mask of your old stories, words and images, the debris of time, waiting to be stitched into art.
Before she discovered she wasn't going to be able to make it to service today, C outlined some ideas that she was going to share here. And so this last piece would have been in her voice, and it's kind of an expansion of the ideas that she offered. Shiva is both destroyer and transformer. Our transformation can begin once we have burned, cleared, destroyed all of the things distracting us from creative thinking. I think about our old stories in that poem. What are our old stories, and which of them still serve us, and which of them need to be cleared? This transformation could be as radical as collaborating on a new way to keep the peace after police abolition has been implemented, or it could be as simple as admitting a current solution for filing isn't working and starting from scratch. It takes creativity to make these decisions and solve these problems. Creativity is so often associated with the arts that we might forget that problem solving is also in this realm. Finding the solution to a system of biased or corrupt structure requires just as much creativity as crafting a master painting. In a workbook called The Artist's Way, A Spiritual Path to Higher Creativity, the author, poet, composer, and journalist Julia Cameron explores how people might rediscover their creativity, and at an even more basic level, to learn to think of themselves as creative. Do any of you think to yourselves, "No, I'm not creative"? This thought has plagued me ever since I learned to think of my childhood doodles as not good enough to actually be art. In The Artist's Way, Julia Cameron takes her readers on an exploration of the voices that have preserved in us the idea that we are not creative. She encourages us to lose those voices of criticism and expectation, to burn them down. She teaches us how to push back against the limiting stories, the old stories, or the beliefs about what we hope, about what we think is possible. You might not be surprised to hear that this involves practicing daily. One of the tools she offers is that of writing what she calls morning pages. Every morning, first thing before getting up, the practice is to write 3 pages of whatever comes to mind. It doesn't matter what it is. It doesn't matter if it is good or deep or meaningful. If it's simply writing over and over again, I don't know what to write until something else comes to mind, then so be it. I did this practice when I was in seminary, when I was introduced to it, and what I learned from it was that simply expressing the first thing that came to mind in the safe space of my own journal helped me learn to stop judging what was in the safe space of my own journal and start to articulate what speaks to me and through me. The hardest part of this learning was the losing of that inner voice that said, "This is crap," as I was writing. And it was only the doing over and over, and sometimes I still think that. C shared that she remembers hearing that if you think of yourself as not creative, you haven't found something that speaks to you. She says that's true for many of us, and we often don't feel empowered to figure out what it is that calls to us, what it is that speaks to us. We also often don't know how we might already be expressing our creativity because we haven't yet burned down our narrower definitions of what it means to be creative. If we work to destroy not only systems that don't work, but also mindsets and voices and habits that aren't working, then we find the opportunity to explore our own creativity. Practicing this, she says, can bring about a self-expression that is soul-healing, new and fulfilling kind of connections with ourselves and others, and new ways of communicating. New ways of seeing and being allow for more possibilities as we learn to build a world of compassion and fairness, giving us access to more solutions for the problems we face. And we might even find that when we're being creative together, we can find the ability to create something that might not have been possible on our own. C closed her thoughts with this one, and I quote, "It's not an easy journey, but I'm excited to consider burning down that voice in my head that says I suck at creativity." Picture C's face. "Because I don't," she says, "and neither do any of you. We all have a creative calling, a way of creative expression that we may not have yet discovered. We can burn down what's standing in our way, and when we do that, we might discover that we're problem solvers, passionate about a kind of art we have yet to discover, or something else utterly unexpected." May it be so. May we be so.